Special thanks to our Season 10 title sponsor, Bio520. In a world where industrial methods have taken a toll on plant health, Bio520 is a beacon of hope. Drawing from ancient agricultural wisdom and modern biophysics, this all-natural additive is a powerhouse of essential minerals sourced from Japan's rich mountain ranges. It's more than a nutrient, it's a lifeline to your plants. Bio520 is incredibly easy to use. Just add it to your existing irrigation system and watch the magic happen. The results? A chemical-free, shorter growth cycle, robust plants, and significantly reduced water usage. Bio520 doesn't just boost growth, it builds resilience. Plants become more resistant to pests and diseases, ensuring healthier yields. Whether you're a commercial grower or a hobbyist, Bio520 fits right into your setup, enhancing everything from germination to harvest. To learn more, visit bio520usa.com and join the movement towards a greener, more sustainable future in agriculture. With Bio520, you're not just growing plants, you're nurturing a legacy.
I watched the farmers go down into the orchards to harvest their pomegranates, and it would be with a wheelbarrow. And they would come up this narrow goat trail with a wheelbarrow full of pomegranates that he'd spent all morning harvesting. And then he would sell them in the village for not a whole lot of money. Well, the USAID came in partnership with us, the United States Army, and said, we can sell this pomegranate in Dubai for $7 for a piece of fruit. So we want to try to help improve the economy in that particular district where I was. So as part of our mission was, let's help improve the economy.
Welcome to the Vertical Farming Podcast, weekly conversations with fascinating CEOs, founders, and ag tech visionaries. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of vertical farming with your host, Harry Duran.
Vertical Farming Podcast, Season 10. Welcome back, fans of the show, regular listeners of the show. I appreciate all the support you provide week in and week out, whether you've been listening all the way back since 2020, season one, episode one, or you recently found the show, it was recommended to you. Please pass it forward or pay it forward and share this episode with someone you think might benefit from this conversation. If you are new to the show, I welcome you with open arms. This is the podcast where we interview fascinating CEOs and founders of the leading vertical farming companies from around the world. I'm your host, Harry Duran, podcasting since 2014 with my first show, Podcast Junkies, and founder of our done-for-you podcast agency, Fullcast. In case you missed last week's episode, we had a great conversation with fellow DJ, Whit Allen. We shared our love and passion for electronic music, and we also talked about how he's evolved his career from clean tech lobbying to the founding of SpectraGrow and all the innovation that's happening in the LED space, and how he's been collaborating with growers and farmers in vertical farming. And it was a really insightful conversation for me to learn more about the LED industry as it plays such an important role in vertical farming. And also, you know, we talked with Whit about the power of joining with like-minded entrepreneurs as in mastermind groups, and also collaboration. We keep talking about collaboration on these episodes, and it was something that Whit spoke about as well. So really fun conversation. And like I said, we shared a mutual passion for DJing. His actual decks were on display if you watched the video of that episode. This week, I speak with David Flynn. He's the Vice President of Business Development at Amplified Ag. And it's been an incredible journey for David. He shares his transition from military service to the world of vertical farming. And it's a testament to the power of mission-driven work. His experiences in Afghanistan, witnessing firsthand the struggles and triumphs of local farmers, have really fueled his passion for bringing fresh food to those in need. It's not every day you meet someone who's as dedicated to making a difference as David and the team at Amplified Ag is. We dive into Amplified Ag's tech, from their propagation containers to their high-yield production units, and David provides insights into the challenges of energy costs and the need for industry-wide collaboration. If you're listening to the show, then I know you're excited and curious about the future of CEA and all the people who are pushing the boundaries, and so you're not going to want to miss this conversation. David's story is really a reminder that with the right technology and a lot of heart, we can make a real impact, and I'm excited to share this with you. If you're enjoying this episode or past episodes, remember to leave us a rating and a review. We're overdue for reading one out on the air. It's really easy. Ratethispodcast.com/VFP. Nothing would please me more than to read yours out next. And remember, these episodes are always chock full of great takeaways. And as a listener, I want you to focus all your energy on our conversation. Rest assured, you can always visit verticalfarmingpodcast.com to read the full show notes for each episode, which includes all guest links as well. Okay, before we jump into this uninterrupted conversation with David Flynn, a few words from the amazing partners that support this show. And also a reminder to you, if your company is interested in sponsorship opportunities, reach out, harry@verticalfarmingpodcast.com. Did you know that 40% of the Earth's surface is dedicated to food production? Now is a critical time to spread the word about vertical farming. And that's why today's episode is brought to you by After Party Productions, a friendly team of content creators dedicated to this cause. After Party creates stunning images and videos for use in websites and social media, sharing forward-thinking stories that need to be told now. They cover conferences, trade shows, and company interviews, any opportunity to boost your brand. To get in touch, contact info@afterpartypost.com. Again, that's info@afterpartypost.com, and take your video production to the next level. This episode is brought to you by our latest and newest podcast, AgTech Weekly Review, your go-to source for the freshest stories shaping the CEA landscape. Hosted by Natasha Coles. Each week, we dive into the fast-moving world of ag tech where innovation meets sustainability and where every story brings us closer to a greener future. Follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast player or visit agtechweeklyreview.com. So David Flynn, Vice President of Business Development at Amplified Ag, thank you so much for joining me on the Vertical Farming Podcast.
That's great. Thanks for having me, Harry. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Likewise. I've been kind of hanging in the same circle since I started the show in 2020, and obviously been seeing a lot of the work that you and the company have been doing. So excited to finally get a chance to talk to you and have you share some of what's been happening. Seems like you guys have been pretty busy, and I appreciate Emily coordinating this and getting this set up.
Yep.
Where are you calling in from?
I'm located in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay. And Is that home for you? Is that where you grew up?
No, I actually grew up outside of Boston, out called Norwood, Massachusetts. And funny story is I went to school at Clemson, the university here in South Carolina. Back then, not a whole lot of Yankees per se were at Clemson. And in the spring weekends, my roommates would take me down to Charleston to James Island and John's Island. And I fell in love with Charleston as a young man way back in the day. And so I always said, if I ever get the chance to live in Charleston, I'm going to do that. So when I say I'm living the dream, I truly am living the dream here in my dream city.
And I noticed that you spent some time in the U.S. Army, and thank you for your service. And
oh, yeah. Thank you.
I'm curious how that I've heard from other folks who have spent time in the armed forces that have actually been on the show as well. And so I'm curious what you can think about from your time there and how it may have even prepared you for some of the things you're working on now.
Yeah, so really, you know, I don't believe in coincidences per se. And when I moved to Charleston, I met Don Taylor, who's the founder of our company, Amplified Ag. And it was sort of a networking opportunity where Don painted a vision of marrying technology with agriculture, and really trying to do good things with technology and agriculture, promoting businesses, job development, those type of things, and then just providing fresh food to people who are in need. And it took me back to my time in the military. In 2010, I was in Afghanistan. I was a battalion commander with 101st Airborne Division, and we were located in Kandahar, and I was living in a village outside the Arganbaug River, which is a agrarian society. And the people there the river was drained very low, and it was tough sledding for them to really make a living with that agriculture community. And so we were partnered with the USAID. And in this one situation in southern Afghanistan, they grow the best pomegranates in the world. I mean, these pomegranates are like this big. And I watched the farmers go down into the orchards to harvest their pomegranates, and it would be with a wheelbarrow. And they would come up this narrow goat trail with a wheelbarrow full of pomegranates that he'd spent all morning harvesting. And then he would sell them in the village for not a whole lot of money. Well, the USAID came in partnership with us, the United States Army, and said, we can sell this pomegranate in Dubai for $7 for a piece of fruit. So we want to try to help improve the economy in that particular district where I was. So as part of our mission was, let's help improve the economy. And so we coordinated with USAID, coordinated with the local population and leaders, and created a wider road so that they could get a dump truck to drive down into the orchard. And now you're filling a dump truck. And now we can drive that dump truck down to the airfield, Kandahar Airfield, and fly that produce to have it distributed in the Middle East, which would result in, you know, better profit margins for that particular community. And so when I heard Don's story and talking about what he was trying to accomplish with Amplified Ag, I knew it was an ideal fit for me because I was mission focused up to that point, and I just saw that the mission would continue in the civilian community. So that stuck down. That was back in 2016 when I first joined the business, and we've been after it for 8 years.
That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting to think about those experiences. And at the time, you may not understand the impact it could have. You saw obviously the impact that it had on the region there, but obviously that story stayed with you. And it's a lot of the challenges, you know, you see local farmers face, and you see farmers facing that here in this country as well. Just this idea of how we get food. It's not a challenge sometimes with how we grow the food, but it's also how we get food delivered, how we keep food fresh, how we get in the hands of the people that need it the most. And a lot of times it ends up being a distribution issue, not necessarily a production issue. And so I'm curious, when you first started having those conversations with Don, how much were you aware of what was happening in this controlled environment space, different than what traditional ag may have looked like to you?
I didn't have any concept of controlled environment agriculture at that point in time. I knew about greenhouses. I didn't think about the acronym so much as controlled environment agriculture. But of course, once I started to learn about the way we were going about it, which is going to be a container farm, and Don really had the vision of the container farm based on his experience as a technologist. He was the CTO of a local software company here in Charleston. And in designing software, he talked about not putting everything in one can, so to speak, so that if you get a bug, it doesn't infect the entire system. So you build redundancy and risk mitigation throughout that system. And so that's what his guidance to our company was, to also preserve risk mitigation, implement that into our solutions so that, you know, if you were to get a pathogen inside of a container, it's not going to take the entire business out. And so as I started learning really in 2016 about the advantages that we're all aware of now, of course, it seems obvious to us now, but it didn't back in 2016, of growing 365 days a year, relatively immune to weather, immune to animal pressures and pressures from the weather, the environment, the climate, and just the ability to really have it dialed in, that environmental control, getting a good, nice, consistent yield turn in, turn out.
So I saw that previous to Amplified Ag, was it just a change in the company? Because I thought it was referred to as Boxcar and Tiger Corn Farms as well, Tiger Corner.
Yeah, so it was, the history of the company started as Boxcar Central. And that was Don's company back in 2002. And he started as a warehouse management system provider for the third-party logistics industry. So when I joined the company, it was me, Don, and a handful of software engineers. And once we got on this roadmap to what we're on now, it was build a new technology stack based on our experience in the warehouse management space. And when you think about warehouse management, operations, inventory management, invoicing, kitting, packaging, all those things happen in the 3PL space. And so we were able to transfer a lot of that knowledge from a software engineering perspective and build a new technology stack that now has us with a farm ERP-like system. And as the years kind of went on, we became farmers and we built the software to mirror what was going on operationally in a farm environment. And in the early days, we had two companies, which was Tiger Corner Farms and Boxcar Central. And we effectively just merged those two companies and created the entity that is now Amplified Ag. And along the way, we started a farm company called Vertical Roots. And we met through our connections in Charleston, a couple of young entrepreneurs that were intent on starting a farm business, a hydroponic farm business, Matt Daniels being one of the co-founders. He was growing lettuce in his closet. He was just really passionate, self-trained horticulturist. He's a mechanical engineer by trade, but a self-made student of horticulture, and had the vision of starting a indoor farming company, but he was undercapitalized. We got introduced to him. And then between him and his partner, Andrew, we formed another leg of the company, which was Vertical Roots. And that was sort of a proof of principle for us. When you think back to 2016, 2017, there were some naysayers in the industry with regards to shipping container farms. And some didn't believe that you could scale with them, or that you could have consistent week in, week out produce. And admittedly, it was very difficult in the first couple of years. And so that's why we formed Vertical Roots, which was to prove that it could be done, using our technology, using container farms, and scaling with these container farms. And it was, We didn't try to sell a container for 7 years until we really had it dialed in and perfected so that we weren't going to test our technology, so to speak, in the open marketplace. We wanted to, and we had the resources to do it. We were fortunate in that way to just kind of work out all the kinks and then approach the marketplace afterwards.
That's a long time to be testing something and not be able to bring something to market. So yeah. I'm sure, you know, as the years went by, the team was probably wondering like if and when this was going to happen. What were some of the things you were discovering early on through your testing, through the different models, and I'm sure different systems that ran through there?
Yeah, the biggest conversion we made was we started out with an aeroponic system. Okay. So it was aeroponic, it was walls. You've seen them where we would have pressurized misting system that would deliver nutrient water that would be aerosol into the root system of these plants that were hanging on either side of the wall. And what we found growing that way is we didn't get the weight that was needed. Plants would either grow flat back up against the wall, or they would reach for the lights and they would curve and they would have sort of an unnatural shape to them. So we, at that point in time, I think we had 8 containers of aeroponic walls. And we had a lot of internal debate on what's the right next step. And it turned out that Matt, again, driving force, said, we need to simplify. We need to go to a tried and true, easier method with less maintenance points in the system. And then we went to a NFT, nutrient film technique system, using Crop King gutters, and then put them in a stacked formation inside of our containers. And that really was a game changer for us. So that enabled us to then produce a lot, hundreds of these containers. So we built over 250 containers, most of which were for vertical roots. And then in the last 12 months, we've put 55 containers across North America, from Alaska down to Miami, Boston, and points in between. And so our containers have seen every climate North America can offer, except for desert. So yeah, we're looking for opportunity again in the desert, but they've done well in every other type of climate.
Yeah, sounds like the time that you took to do that research, and rather than rush something to the market, it seems like it paid off in the end, because you keep testing the solutions was really the right approach to make sure you had something you were confident about putting into the market.
Yeah, 100%. And it there were some rocky roads, of course, like anything else. The farm team was tired on the technology team and really made us better through that process.
So obviously, because of the time frame, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask what the challenges were like during 2020. It's when I started the show, as I had mentioned to you and in our pre-chat, and companies came and went as a result of what happened during those couple of years. And obviously you guys have made it through that. And I'm curious if you can just kind of go back in time to that point of time. There's a lot of things happening across the world, and obviously for business owners, a lot of challenges. And then specifically for people who are in the food distribution business, I mean, there's a lot of lessons learned and maybe things that were unexpected. So I'm curious if you can kind of paint a picture about what the team was going through back then.
Yeah, let's think back to April of 2020, March, April timeframe. All of us were kind of in the same boat, right? Me and the rest of the world trying to figure out what's going on. And at that point, we were still in the early days of vertical roots. And if you would have looked at us back in 2020, you would have called us a farm company and not a technology company, because the reality was, in that day, that was the majority of our business, was actually the farm side of things. Still proof of concept, proving things out. And I think this is not unique to others in our space, but what we found is, because the restaurants were closing, that the wholesale dried up, right? Wholesale lettuce sales dried up because restaurants weren't open. Food service was kind of taking a dip. But then the other side of the coin is retail exploded. Everybody, I guess, wanted to buy lettuce during COVID. They wanted toilet paper and they wanted lettuce. So we started increasing the production. We built a ton of containers, sort of chasing that demand. And that's where we really exploded as a company, based on the demand that was presented through the retail space. And that's where we kind of grew the business a little bit.
When you think about the conversations you had with Don early on and him convincing you that this was a unique opportunity for you, and obviously you've seen a lot of growth since that company is where it is now, how have you changed in terms of like your, anything that along the lines of your leadership direction, or just in terms of managing teams? Have you taken the time? I know when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to look back and see any personal growth that's happened. But if you look back and think about from the time you were hired to everything that's happened in the company since then, how do you see that in terms of your personal growth?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I didn't really thought about that. I've done everything in the company. That's what you would expect in a startup. Back when you're five or six guys, me and Don were laying floors and containers. We were wiring boxes. We were pulling wire. We were designing software. I didn't have any software experience, so I was effectively doing product management with kind of designing UI structures and conveying that to the software engineers. And I never, thinking back to my first career, I never could have envisioned that I'd be doing these type of things. And so in the early days, I was leading the software team. Then I was helping build containers. And then I moved over to lead the manufacturing team. So we hired a bunch of engineers and builders. So then I was overseeing the manufacturing of the containers. And then over the years, as when we had pits, valleys, so to speak, we had a situation where our pack room, we were packing 40,000 pounds of produce per week, and we had labor shortage, we had a labor problem. And so I moved to Columbia, South Carolina for 5 months, and I led and reorganized the pack operations, the pack house, to get us trough that we were in. So I spent 5 months in the cold inside a cooler leading the team. And then as we sort of scaled back the farm operation and pivoted to technology, I was a natural choice in the business to kind of do the business development piece, because at that point, I had understood the software side of things. I understood what it took to build the containers. I had seen the marketplace. I knew about produce sales. I knew about packaging. I understood shipping. I understood market unit economics on both farm operations. And so I was able, in my current role now, to be able to pass those lessons learned and pass that knowledge onto our clients that come in and want to get into the space, we can point them in the right direction and share as an open book, just to make sure that this industry, I believe in this industry, and we're trying to help others thrive.
Yeah, so you mentioned the industry. So when did you start to notice that it was picking up steam? Because you're considered pioneers or early innovators in this space, especially if you go back to the time that Don was working with containers themselves. And then obviously I started in 2020 and I was noticing a trend. We've seen it from the investment money that's coming in, good and bad, because obviously some of these didn't pan out. And so just watching from the sidelines, what's been your perspective on the interest and resurgence of people's awareness of vertical farming, all these conferences that are popping up? I can't even keep track with all these emails I'm getting from all these conferences, not only here, but like in all these countries that are waking up, like UAE, right? You know, they get 95% of their food imported. So it's top of mind for them. And I'm curious what your perspective has been in terms of the overall industry.
Yeah, I think in terms of the industry, I think it's learned a lot since I've been in it now 8 years, like I say. And we saw big investments that didn't pan out. And then we've seen others that kind of stayed lean. I would count us in the group that sort of stayed lean and really started honing in on the unit economics of it. And based on my experience, what I think others are seeing is that CEA, from my perspective, is really designed to be hyper-local. I think that's where it really succeeds. You know, our farm in Atlanta, for example, is co-located at a distribution center with Collins Brothers Distribution at the State Farmers Market, where we harvest 12 feet outside the building. We walk it into the distribution center. We're saving on all the upfront shipping that goes in there, fresher product. And out the other side where we hand it off, we do the transaction in that building, so we don't have to deal with the shipping end of things, which we saw, and I think others have seen this as well, is, you know, when you have such a large operation and when your operation exceeds the demand of the local community, and then you have to start loading trucks, 53-foot trailers of 26 pallets that have to go multi-states, that's where you start to see the margins erode when you have to get into that shipping aspect of things, because now you bear the burden of shipping. If something goes wrong with the shipping, if you have a contract shipper, they get to the distribution center and they stuck there for 6 hours or so because it's so busy, then you got to pay detention fees. And so I think that was a lot of these large scale operations. I think some of them are still doing well, but from my perspective, if I have to ship 14 states away, that's California's job. That's what they do. So our job as CEA folks should be to really put the freshest produce in the community as we can.
Yeah, I love this continued use of the term hyperlocal, because people, especially within these industries and these terms get locked in, like organic and even local, as I started to have these conversations, found out that means different things to different people. And I think in some places, local can be, I think it's 40 miles or 100 miles. I don't know what it was, but it was just some number that would make you as a consumer, think it's like next door or like a couple miles away, but you get this wide berth of like what's allowed in that label. And I think now we're seeing the use of hyperlocal to indicate that we're measuring stuff in feet now, you know, and it's really interesting when you can get that, eliminate the need for the transport and get it delivered to people. You know, you really can't get any fresher than having it 12 feet away, like you said. So I think it's interesting, but it's also an education process, educating the consumer, because they may not be able to tell the difference when they're in the supermarket aisle. And I've been making more of a conscious effort when I'm in there to look at, it's a little bit more expensive, but you look at the stuff from greenhouses and vertical farms, Revel Farms here in the case of Minnesota where I'm at. But how much of it do you think when you put your consumer hat on is needed from an education perspective in terms of educating people as to where their food comes from? You mentioned Salinas. Like, I had this conversation with my dad about like the benefits of vertical farming, and he's like, well, everything seems to be working. So he didn't seem to have an issue with it coming like in a bag 3,000 miles away. And, you know, it's even me in the industry has a challenge with that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, a number of directions I could go there is, you brought the bag up. I've had the fortune of being in some large scale packaging facilities where that lettuce comes from Salinas and then it goes into a wash process. So it'll come in, it'll go through a chlorine bath, it'll come out of the chlorine bath, it'll go through a tumbler to dry the lettuce, then it goes onto a conveyor and all the way up through, gets weighed and put into a bag and then into a box and out to the consumer. That didn't really excite me in terms of wanting to eat that lettuce after seeing the process that it goes through. And so, you know, I think the restaurant scene in particular in Charleston, very excited to buy from a local farmer. When they can talk to the farmer, they know who he is, they want to support, they want to buy locally. You get other organizations that are promoting the local economy. And so it kind of gives you a leg up when you go in there, and then they're able to put your name on the menu so that when clients come in, they're getting educated where their food came from, because they can see it on the menu. They say, hey, this is from local farm X. And that kind of gives people a good feeling knowing that they have produce right from their neighborhood. And then it's kind of like you want, when you go get seafood, you're excited to be in a seaside town, not that air travel maybe have eliminated that somewhat, but it's kind of nice to be, when you go to the beach, you want to eat seafood kind of thing.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that, being in the Midwest and having sushi over here. Yeah. So I'm curious, for the not familiar with Amplified Ag, like how big is the company now? And maybe talk a little bit about the current product offerings.
Yeah, so right now the company is exclusively technology with a small farm operation in Atlanta, as I described. We're a small business now. We're under 20 employees. All of our employees are technology folks. So everything from mechanical engineers, software engineers, customer support. And our offering is the technology range of operations. So everything from a propagation container, which is, I think, one of our most adaptable containers in that we have 81,000 transplants that will fit. So imagine a room, we had 16 racks with 5 shelves on each one of these racks. And then you could fit 4 10-20 trays in each one of those shelves. And now before you know it, you have 81,000 transplants, and that could feed up to 20 container farms in our side of the business. Or what we're finding in talking to greenhouse operators, it's really a nice complement to a greenhouse that does propagation on site, not a nursery, but they generate their own transplants. So if you take that propagation container and you insert it into a greenhouse, now you've got the best germination and propagation 100% that could be utilized for transplanting into the greenhouse and then saving bench space. So each one of those containers would have 900 square feet equivalent of growing space that is pretty valuable real estate inside of a greenhouse. So now you're saving that space in the greenhouse and you're getting a more consistent transplant. And then we've got our production containers. Our production containers are 3,600 count, and they get the highest yields in the industry, 20 pounds per foot annually, which is a good greenhouse benchmark in terms of production lettuce. And that's 1,000 pounds every 3 weeks. So we operate on a 21-day grow cycle. And that's a total grow cycle of 38 to 42 days, but we're segmenting out the early stage growth and then transplanting to get that week in, week out consistency. And then as we thought about over the past, really the original core mission of the company was to provide safe access to fresh food globally. And so we started looking into food insecurity and food security challenges that across not only obviously the globe, we can see those issues, but you know, we're working with foundations across the country, New York City being one of them, that's businesses and foundations, non-governmental organizations trying to solve food insecurity. And then I could take that all the way back to South Carolina. We're working with the Governor's School for Agriculture. It's in McCormick County, South Carolina. McCormick County is the, if it's not the lowest populated county in the state, it's the second. And people there, it's a food desert. And so there's folks there that you wouldn't imagine are challenged as much. And you wouldn't think about that as a food desert, but it's a reality. And so we're trying to be a system integrator of bringing like-minded individuals together, where we've got this governor's school identified a problem in their community. They want to help solve that problem. They could use our technology. We know other places to help get funding, bring funding in, bring a distributor in and get the team together, and then find operators to get onto that equipment. And ideally, that's all happening to the betterment of the community and getting folks locally engaged. You know, we had a conversation with David Beasley. He's a former governor of South Carolina. He leads the World Food Program now out in Rome. A couple of years ago, I met with him, and he talked about the millions of people that are starving across our planet. We had a conversation with him about how can we leverage our technology to help with that problem. And of course, he looked at me and said, well, we don't need lettuce. I said, well, I know you don't need lettuce. Tell me what you do need. Let me work with your team and figure out if there's other products that would be more sustainable, more nutritious, more fulfilling to get into these places in need. And so we were able to work with the USDA Ag Research Service here in Charleston. They've got the Vegetable Research Lab. We've done 3 contracts with them where they've got 16 of our containers, and we custom built these containers with the explicit purpose of trying to figure out, beyond leafy greens, what can we grow in this environment that would be of substance for somebody that's in need? We're really optimistic about other possibilities with this. We've done another research lab down in Florida that's doing a root vegetable study. So they're studying carrots. We're talking to others about growing potatoes, where we're not just talking hydroponics. We're taking pots, a 12-inch pot filled with soil, and irrigating those pots automatically, and then putting all the other technology in the container just to see, let's try and figure out where this could go. You know, we're working with the United States Marine Corps. They have a food security research project that they're doing out on the West Coast, and we're working alongside them to see, can we get a container deployed into a contingency area, remote, austere environment, where you could provide fresh food? And then you start thinking about sub-Saharan Africa or other places where water is a problem, and these containers generate 40 gallons of condensate per day based on the transpiration rates of the lettuce that's inside and what that dehumidification process is creating externally. And how do we repurpose that water in addition to a precious commodity, in addition to the other goodness that grows inside these containers? And so we're really driven right now to look for opportunities to be a system integrator to bring food security, help leverage food security for people in need.
That's fantastic to hear. I mean, it's one of those things that people sort of write off when they think about vertical farming, that they just keep bringing back this idea of that we're just growing lettuce. And I think pushing the limits of what's capable in your systems, and just the fact that you're trying carrots and potatoes, and there's companies that are doing tree saplings. You know, there's so many, I think when you get the right minds working on these projects, and you're not limited by thinking solely on what it's produced so far, but what the combination of technology can do, and maybe just some ingenuity and just MacGyvering some stuff together sometimes, just to kind of see what works, because you're probably surprising yourself sometimes in some of these experiments. You've seen stuff grow that you may not have previously thought was possible.
Right. 8 years ago, I didn't know much, but I've at least learned over 8 years that if you give a plant light, nutrient, water, and control the environment, it's going to grow. And that'd be operational problem to solve, and then the unit economics that would follow behind that.
Yeah. You mentioned having installations across the United States in a variety of different climates and states. I'm wondering if, just by virtue of having been in all these different places, was there any specific location that maybe kind of surprised you in terms of logistically challenged situations, or anything where, you know, you may have had to adjust what you previously thought might work there?
Yeah, the longest distance job we did was in Ketchikan, Alaska. So there's a nonprofit in Ketchikan, Alaska, who's like-minded as we are, and he's trying to solve food insecurity throughout the state. And for us to get a container to Alaska, it traveled by truck to Seattle. It got on a barge in Seattle. It went up to Ketchikan, got offloaded at the port of Ketchikan, put on another truck, and then sent down the road to where it got set up. And we didn't think that area got much snow historically. It was more rain because it's right on the water. And then sure enough, they got a snowstorm where the owner sent us a picture of the container covered in snow. And then he took a picture of the inside, and it's 75 and sunny inside, regardless of the blanket of snow. And actually, it's a fun picture to look at, but it's actually just provided insulation for that container. Snow is a good insulator. So that was probably the most logistically challenging job that we did. We haven't done any international deals yet. We've got some irons in that fire. But yeah, we cracked the code up there in the Great Northwest.
I mean, that's the ideal, right? To see in these extreme environments what's possible. And just to think about having that picture of that 75-degree environment in the middle of that snowstorm, to know that they can have access to fresh produce is pretty wild to think about. And I'm sure they're reaping the benefits of that, and they're pretty happy up there.
Yep.
And so when you think about how much you've learned over the years and the challenges that you encounter on a daily basis, what's a tough question you've had to ask yourself recently?
Oh, boy. A tough question I had to ask myself is the cost of power.
Yeah.
Can this industry survive on the existing power structure and cost? You know, if I look up to New York City, I've got a client that's paying 30 cents a kilowatt hour. He's not using our containers. He's in a indoor warehouse where he's put in grow racks, and he's implemented our control system, our fertigation system, and our software. But when I look at the cost of power, that's prohibitively expensive. In South Carolina, we have some of the cheapest rates in the nation. You know, when we were producing at significant, you know, using a lot of power, we were down at 7 cents a kilowatt hour. And if you're at 7 cents a kilowatt hour, that's a good place to be. 13, 14 cents a kilowatt hour is not bad. You can make it work. But when you get up to 25 and 30 cents, the math doesn't add up. So we're working with solar providers, and we're working with others, to your point about smart people getting together and trying to figure out how to get these numbers more manageable from a cost perspective. I think we've got to keep pushing the envelope on other, either renewable or geothermal or some other complement of energy that's going to get that number down to where the CEA farmer can make it work. Because let's face the facts. There's not going to be enough land on this earth in 25 years for outdoor agriculture to provide at all. The CEA space, in my opinion, is obviously, it's not going to supplant traditional agriculture, but it's going to complement it. And we're going to need CEA farmers to thrive into the future. We can't wait 25 years to realize we have a problem. We see it now. And this is where we need, you know, help from local and national government. You know, I went to the USDA Outlook Forum up there in Washington, D.C. last month. Fascinating event. Heard the secretary speak and another number of other distinguished speakers. And when it comes down to it, with a farm bill and all this legislation that was written was designed to help traditional ag. And we really need help getting CEA recognized as part of the ag system and open the opportunity up for them to be on an equal footing with traditional ag for programs that would help them be successful. Because again, it's needed to put the whole system, ecosystem in place.
Have you seen any traction there? Because that's a subject that came up. I've heard it mentioned a couple of times. I was just at Indoor Ag Con in Las Vegas last week. And so some of that was mentioned as well. So are you seeing movement there in terms of parity with the support that's being given to traditional ag?
There's a number of grant programs out there right now that are favorable towards CEA, which is a nice thing. I've got a friend that works in the Senate Ag Committee, and they asked us to provide input to the farm bill, which was nice. So we're able to at least express our challenges and problems and see where, when they write the new farm bill, let's have some more favorability towards the CEA people that are out there.
Yeah, I think there's more work to be done there, but I think these conversations help. And I think when they see that it is you know, it's obviously minuscule right now when you compare it to what's being provided by traditional ag. But I think to the extent that it's being providing food, especially in the work that's being done in some of these communities, these food deserts, I think connections and just a lot of it maybe just be education, right? Educating people in government that this is something that's viable now and that's helping to provide more solutions for this. So I think it'll be probably not as fast as everyone in CA would like, but I think the fact that those are happening and the fact that you mentioned this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. 100%.
So as we get close to wrapping up, what I like to do because of these conversations and they're listened to by folks in the industry, I like to leave some space at the end of these conversations for any feedback or comments you have for your peers and colleagues in the vertical farming CEA space. And, you know, based on, I love to hear your perspective, given how much experience you've had in the industry. But I'm wondering, is there any message that you have for your colleagues in this space as you think about what we've been up to up until this point?
I've seen a change in the past 8 years. You know, when I first joined the industry, everything was sort of a secret. And, you know, when you look at a bunch of folks out there who are innovators, you get innovators, early adopters, there wasn't a whole lot of sharing that was going on. Everything was sort of close to the vest. And then I think there was a silver lining of some of the failures that happened in the industry. I think that loosened people up a little bit. To where now we need each other to survive, right? Yeah. So we're going to need to, we need to be transparent with one another. We're going to need to join together to try to get the right legislation in place, join together to try to figure out how to solve the power challenges that I described, get assistance with, even for shipping container farms. And I think greenhouse operators somewhat see the same thing with permitting challenges. You know, if, as we go into different communities, building officials don't know what to make of a shipping container farm. And they think it's a building. They think it's all this and the that and the other. And well, it's a piece of farm equipment.
Yeah.
And it's there to go into the community to create jobs. It's here to provide local produce. It's here for good, breeding goodness. So I would just say that's my biggest takeaway from the industry over the years. It's just, I think it's coming together better now than it has at any point that I've seen.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And then just in closing, when you think about what is on the roadmap for Amplified Ag, what has you most excited? You look out, a lot can change obviously in 6 to 12 months as we've seen, but what has you excited as a company for upcoming projects?
I mean, we're super excited about the food security. I mean, when I talked about how I got into this industry to begin with, Don, is it was, we want to help people. And now that I see that we've started to reach out a little bit more, it's an amazing number of organizations that are trying to solve problems, trying to solve that hunger issue, trying to solve nutritional issues, doing it in underserved communities, doing it in food deserts, doing it overseas, domestically. And I'm really encouraged by what I see on that side of things, because that all ties back to hyperlocal, right? That we're ideally suited for that type of situation because we're on the ground, we're in the community, and we're part of the community when these things happen. So that's really got me more excited than at any point since I've been in this.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on, and I'm sure you've got a lot on your plate. It sounds like with all the projects that are in motion, I appreciate Emily coordinating this. And so we'll get folks to the website, amplifiedaginc.com. Anywhere else you want to send folks to connect with you or to learn more about what you're working on?
No, I think that's good. It's on the website and they can find us from there, and happy to have a chat.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciate you sharing your perspective because it's helpful to see people who've been doing this for a while, who've been through the ups and downs, who understand how important it is. And it's interesting to see how your life's journey, you know, just from the work you've done in, through your service, to understand that this is a worldwide problem. And there's a lot we can do. And I think it's been interesting to see how the industry has matured. And so I appreciate everything you've done for sharing your story, because I know it's going to be inspirational to our listeners.
That's awesome, Harry. Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity. It's been nice to meet you and really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you. Thanks again for listening. Eternally grateful to my guests for spending that precious hour of time with me and sharing their story. As always, full show notes available at verticalfarmingpodcast.com. There you'll find summaries, key takeaways, and resources mentioned, and also a back catalog of all our past episodes. Special thanks to our title sponsor, Bio520. Bio520 is based on the deep knowledge of plants developed over centuries across Asia, extracting some of the very best minerals in the world from the lush, rich mountain ranges in Japan and using highly effective non-chemical agricultural practices in combination with the most advanced cutting-edge biophysics technology, Bio520 is one of the most advanced, truly organic mineral compounds your crops will ever experience. Learn more at bio520usa.com. Podcast production and marketing provided by Fullcast. To learn about the five key pillars of a successful podcast that every business owner needs to know prior to launching, visit fullcast.co and watch the free video. As a reminder, if you've enjoyed this episode or past episodes, do me a favor, leave me a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/VFP. Nothing makes me happier than to read those out on future episodes. And don't forget to tune in next week for a conversation with yet another fascinating leader from the world of vertical farming. Until we meet again, here's to your health.
Thanks for listening. To hear all past episodes and read the episode summaries, which includes any links mentioned in the episode, as well as a full show transcription, visit verticalfarmingpodcast.com. There, you can sign up for our email list to be notified when new episodes are published.